Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. This is the show. Well, we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so glad to be back. Been on the road for a couple of weeks here and there, all over, really, the Midwest, the West, out there chasing, working in the new Obama economy, in the recovery, where one does three times the work for approximately one-third of the profit. I'm just glad to have survived and made it back, and glad to have you out there. Thank you very much for tuning in. And what a wild, wild few weeks it's been since I took off. We got North Korea lobbing missiles near Japan. Japan threatening to shoot down any missiles.
Yeah.
Islamists lobbing missiles into Israel. Yes, you haven't heard much about that, have you? It's been going on. Israel struck back yesterday. Lots of insanity going on over there. We got earthquakes. We got a volcano. We still have a disappeared jumbo jet. Surely it's the sign that the world has gone mad. No, the biggest sign, that's right, Ann Coulter announcing she's supporting Mitt Romney in 2016. It's as insane as all of it. Another shooting out at Fort Hood. Another shooting out at Fort Hood and a debate on whether or not we should arm the army. This is how far we've fallen. My, and it is an interesting debate. Can the young godless heathens of today that populate the United States military be trusted with weapons on their own bases? I think it's open to debate. Although I think the weapon that the killer at Fort Hood used, I don't think he brought it on the base legally. What else? We've got the new rise of National Socialism in Europe and in Eastern Europe. I mean, with softer edges, but with fewer moral inhibitions than the last time. So that probably won't end well. We've got a couple of conservatives trying to make a movie about Kermit Gosnell, one of the most prolific mass murderers in American history. That's a movie that must be made. And finally, David Letterman. David Letterman announced that he is retiring. I was surprised not only to find out that he's still alive, but he's still on television. I had no idea. He's at the bottom of our list of just quick takes this week as we dive in. I was going to close the show with this next story, but I've decided to open it just to get it out of the way because my extremely attractive audio engineer, she can cover her ears for this part of the show, and then you'll be able to listen for the rest, I think. We've got a story from Breitbart. Authorities in Washington State believe that a series of murders of prostitutes back in 1990 were committed by Douglas Perry. And now Douglas Perry has been captured. He's been charged with the murders. But in the meantime, Douglas has become Donna, a transgender woman who claims that she's not responsible for the murders because Douglas no longer exists. That's her defense in court, in front of God and everybody and the judge and all. She says since she's now a woman, she is a wholly different person, and therefore she isn't responsible for what her former male self may or may not have done, i.e. killing all those prostitutes back in 1990. That's right. Donna, now Breitbart goes on to say, Donna told authorities that she would not confess to murder because she didn't do it and claimed not to know if Douglas killed the prostitutes. First of all, I'm annoyed that the Breitbart reporter goes along with the outrageous trend in journalism to call trannies by their fake name and fake sex. Throughout the rest of the story, they refer to accused murderer Douglas Perry as Donna, and they call it her. They call him her throughout the rest of the story. So that's just, that's outrageous that the reporters at Breitbart, which is supposedly a conservative news outlet, go along with the sham, make-believe. That's almost as insane as what Douglas Perry is asserting right now, that he no longer exists and doesn't know. If he did exist, he wouldn't know if he was involved in those murders. That's the state of justice and the culture in general. Right off the bat, top of the show, there you go. There you have it. Further down in the justice file, deeper down in the black, dark underbelly of the justice file, we find Judge Cynthia Brin. Does anyone remember this story? I had not heard this story, but Judge Cynthia Brin is an Illinois judge, and that's a $182,000 a year job. Pretty good pay. Although $182,000 isn't what it used to be in Chicago, that's pretty good money. Well, Brin was found not guilty of misdemeanor battery by reason of insanity last year. While on the bench, she broke into an extended rant while presiding over traffic court. She basically went berserk and ballistic and shoved and maybe hit or otherwise assaulted a sheriff's deputy outside the Daly Justice Center. There's an oxymoron there, the Daly Justice Center. During a manic episode she experienced back in March of 2012. So in her defense, she claimed that she was insane. And she was found not guilty because she was insane. This is a judge, by the way. Did I mention she's a judge? What's a judge? A judge is a lawyer in a robe and maybe nothing else underneath because they're a bunch of perverts. Well, Brim, according to the Chicago Tribune, Brim was effectively suspended from her duties as a judge after she was, well, involved in this assault. Pled not guilty by reason of insanity. She was found not guilty of this misdemeanor assault. She has continued to collect her $182,000 salary since her suspension back in 2012. Well, last month, Brim was on the verge of losing that salary, and so she once again has entered into the court and said that now that she's on medications, she's able to fulfill her duties as a judge again, and she claims she has not had any psychotic episodes since, and she wants to be reinstated onto the bench. She says, "I can serve as a judge with full capability as long as I continue to take drugs." Brim has been hospitalized at least 9 times for mental illness since 1994. She's currently on drugs. She once was carried out of the courtroom on a stretcher after going catatonic during court. So, bipolar, schizophrenic disorder, she's on drugs, she's been in 9 times for mental. Obviously, she is qualified to be a judge in the modern American justice system. In fact, she should probably be nominated to the Supreme Court, but only if she's black. She is a woman. So if she's black and a woman, and she stays on her medications, Barry should appoint her to the Supreme Court so that she can be a perfect representation of the state of justice, judges, and lawyers in America today. Thank you, Ms. Brim. Please step aside now. For more serious news from the mental health front, according to U.S. News and World Report, more than 4 million American children and adolescents have mental illness, and hospitalizations among this demographic, which is children, has increased by about 25% between 2007 and 2010. A recent study suggests nearly 1 in 10 children are hospitalized because of a mental health problem at one time or another in their young lives. Depression, bipolar disorder, and psychosis are among the most common conditions associated with mental health hospitalizations, and these are being seen on the increase in little kids. Little kids! What's going on? How do little kids go insane? Or how do little kids end up mentally ill? I was just hanging out with my children this morning, and I was sitting there drinking my coffee, pondering all the grown-up problems that I have in my life. And I was watching my five-year-old. Is she five yet? She turns five. She turns five in a couple of weeks. I was watching her entertain herself endlessly with a four-foot section of tubing of some hose that was laying around in the basement. And she's just having a blast along with her sisters. They're just having a blast with this old piece of hose. Hours and hours of entertainment. And I thought, oh, to be a child again. Get rid of all my grown-up problems and just go entertain myself with just about any piece of garbage I can find laying around the house. Well, it's not garbage, but it's just something she found laying around the house. They're all happy, well-adjusted. Well, my children have been raised here on the McBurney compound in the fear and admonition of the Lord, being homeschooled by my extremely attractive audio engineer. But will they have a relationship with God? They're open to a relationship with the living God, the Creator. And so I think there's a good chance they will not end up alongside Judge Brim there in the mental institution with all these other kids. But I do believe that as godlessness increases and children are raised having to deny their innate, inborn knowledge of their Creator, having to deny that and refuse that, I think that leads to mental illness. So I think mental illness amongst the youth will only continue to rise as the deviants and the perverts ascend in society and godliness and Christianity and religion continue to be oppressed in society. More children will go insane. And of course, more adults as well, and, well, especially judges and lawyers. How they don't all go insane, I can't even imagine how they can even function. And in fact, I have more news from the proctocracy. If you've been tuning in for a while, you know that is my title for the current governing system in America, the proctocracy, ruled by lawyers. Well, listen to this. This is from the Independent over in England. William Melker Dinkle is a 51-year-old former nurse from Minnesota, and he was convicted of aiding suicide. He would seek out vulnerable suicidal people online and then persuade them to take their own lives as he watched via webcam. Now, he was convicted of aiding suicide back in 2011, and he was sentenced to 360 days in prison. Now, there is a very creative sentence there, 360 days in prison for aiding in suicide. He would disguise himself online as a young woman, going by several names, and he would offer his victims to join him in a suicide pact, suggesting they take their lives together via webcam. Well, at the appointed hour, he would claim his camera had stopped working and then watch as the other person went through with their suicide. Now, how do you get sentenced to 360 days in prison for doing that? That in and of itself is a negative commentary on the state of criminal justice in America. Now, he admitted having entered fake suicide pacts with as many as 10 people, five of whom he believed had taken their own lives. And he told police he did it for the thrill of the chase, is what he said. He did it for the thrill of the chase. Now, his lawyers maintain that Minnesota's assisted suicide law is too broad. The legislation's wording criminalizes anyone who, quote, intentionally advises, encourages, or assists another in taking the other's own life. But his lawyers argued that this assisted suicide law, as written in Minnesota, limited their client's right to free speech, the freedom to encourage other people to commit suicide. That's what he claimed, and, he's actually going to have a hearing His case has been sent back to a lower court to decide if he has the freedom to encourage and trick other people into committing suicide. Unbelievable. This reminds me, my pastor was on a panel last week with former Colorado Governor Dick Lamb, the man who legalized the murder of innocent children in Colorado, and the man who's, I think his children, Dick Lamb's whole family now runs the Hemlock Society. And I wish they'd just get on with it, for crying out loud. Anyway, I'm hoping that Pastor Bob got some audio from the death panel. He called it the death panel. He said, "Doug, I'm going to be moderate. I'm going to be appearing on a death panel with Dick Lamb." And I said, "Well, make sure he goes first." I said, ironically. Anyway, so hopefully there will be something that we can find out about that. But this is unbelievable. Freedom of speech to encourage other people to kill themselves. I think that's the founding plank in the modern Democrat Party, if I'm not mistaken.
The devil says.
That's the Weekly Worldview, and we're back. A little bit rusty from being on the road, you'll have to forgive me. Trying to get back into the groove of commenting on news and events of the day, but it's kind of difficult. I spent, I don't know how many hours I spent cooped up in my car driving across country. But I had the benefit, though, of having several CDs from my church. Got to listen to a number of great Bible studies, so... But I don't think it's good for my health. Certainly not good for the strength in my legs and my my stomach and my back. But now I'm sitting here complaining about my aches and pains. Definitely must be all grown up. All right, now, some encouraging news from the Politics File. This is from CBS in Sacramento, California. They tell us, this is as reported by the Associated Press, they tell us, a Republican candidate for California Attorney General said last week that state lawmakers who are found guilty of crimes that endanger the lives of others should face the death penalty.
What?
Yeah, I know. Can I send this guy a donation for his... His name is Phil Wyman, and he's been in the state legislature out there in California for a number of years. He says he was motivated by the case of Democrat Senator Leland Yee. Another story that you've heard very little about, but Leland Yee is an anti-gun crusader, an anti-Second Amendment crusader out there in California, along with being pro-homosexual, anti-death penalty, pro-homosexual marriage, every other kind of perversion and disgusting activity. This guy is promoting it, but he's been against guns staunchly, and he was charged with attempting to coordinate an international gun-running scheme from the Philippines with a bunch of gangsters. I saw pictures of the guys this fellow was running with. They had the tattoos and the whole thing. I mean, these were OG gangsters.
Wait a minute. Tattoo doesn't describe criminals.
Well, that's true. Almost, yeah. I guess you cannot use the tattoos as a blanket indictment. But these guys had the satanic flaming tattoos all over their upper torso. Oh, yeah, that's right. They could be a youth pastor. Could be a youth pastor in Aurora, Colorado, for all you know. But when I saw the pictures, I thought, well, that looks like a gangster. You know, because of all the hideous, evil, flaming devil tattoos. Anyway, so ironically, Yee, an anti-Second Amendment advocate, is trying to set up a gun-running scheme. And Phil Wyman, who's running, as I said, for Attorney General out there in California, he said in a news release and a telephone interview that the most egregious abusers of their public office, if convicted, should be able to choose their own method of execution, public hanging, firing squad, or lethal injection. And he said they should be executed, quote, as a deterrent to others, unquote. I like this guy a lot. I think he should run for president. California Senate Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg, a Democrat from Sacramento, well, he was outraged at the idea put forth by Phil Wyman that people who abuse their political office and put the lives of innocent people in danger should be executed. Well, this Democrat, Daryl Steinberg, he was at a loss as to how to comment. He says, how can you even respond to something that ludicrous? The thought of executing people who put other people's lives in danger through abuse of public office? A Democrat, he can't even comprehend the idea. The Senate last week suspended Leland Yee and two other Democrat senators who were facing a number of criminal charges. But they haven't been convicted of any crimes, and so they continue to be paid unless they resign in shame, which they have no shame. So Leland Yee will not resign. In fact, he'll probably end up, what is he now? Leland Yee is a state senator. He'll probably end up a federal senator from California. You know, or he'll, I don't know, he'll open up a methadone clinic up there. Who knows? He's got a bright future, though, in California. And as far as Mr. Phil Wyman goes, I don't see him getting elected in California because he has far too much common sense. Oh, yeah, speaking of death panels, my pastor was at this panel on suicide with Dick Lamb last week for DUH. That's what we call DU, Denver University. We just call it DUH for short. Anyway, he was going to do a panel this week on the death penalty, but he got disinvited. It may be because he called Dick Lamb a liar, called him a bald-faced liar in front of God and everybody and all the little kids there at DUH. And they were very upset that he called Dick Lamb a liar. I think Dick Lamb asserted that no one who had ever been declared brain dead had ever recovered or woken up. And Bob, Pastor Bob, said, I'll bet you $10,000 to your favorite charity that I can produce at least one case documented. Dick Lamb wouldn't take the bet. And at some point later, Bob said, you know, you're just a liar. And boy, you don't want to call a liar in broad daylight in public, in front of a bunch of other people who regularly lie, because that upsets everyone. The last thing we want to do is bring up the fact that we're all a bunch of liars, Mr. Enyar. You're making us quite uncomfortable. And so he was disinvited from the death penalty panel that's going on this week at DUH. And so I have volunteered to fill in, and I'm hoping they don't find out who I am, so that they'll let me come on. And if they think Bob Enyart was outrageous and accusatory and somewhat combative, well, you just can imagine what's going to happen when I get in there. Yeah, I'm not going to be nice. I don't plan on being nice at all. I see these people who are anti-death penalty advocates as a direct threat to my family. The safety and well-being of my family is in jeopardy by those who seek to end the death penalty, and they're also a threat against true religion, and they're blasphemous against the gospel of Jesus Christ and his finished work on the cross itself. So I consider them antichrist, enemies of all that is good and righteous, and I plan to convey that thought at the panel. And it should be a lot of fun. So if you're out here in Colorado and you want to go to DU to the death penalty panel, it's this Thursday at 6 o'clock, I don't know where it is. I have it written down somewhere. It's at the DU campus at some, I can't remember. I should have been more prepared so I could promote my own public appearance. Maybe I'll get to it before the end of the show if I can manage to open up my calendar and figure out exactly where this thing might be located. I'll try to promote that. Anything else here from... get back to Phil Wyman. He's running for California Attorney General, has far too much sense to be the Attorney General of California. People in California be absolutely freaked out by the idea that he thinks capital crimes deserve capital punishment. That is a foreign concept to almost everyone under the age of 40 at this point in America's career, and it really is just sad. But I'll do my best with the ignorant, unwashed masses out at DUH on Thursday to try to clue them in that, in fact, capital crimes must require capital punishment. It's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter that's critical to the survival of society in general and to the preservation of the souls of the innocent. All right. We'll be performing at the Newman Center for the Performing Arts on the campus of here in Colorado. 6 o'clock, Thursday, April 10th. If you want a ticket, send me $500. And I will issue a ticket to each and every one of you who sends me $500. All right. Now, let's get back to the news. It's a bargain at twice the price. You kidding me? All right. Probably the most significant story of cultural import this past week has been the departure of the CEO of Mozilla. You've all heard about this, I'm sure. CEO Brendan Eich was, he was forced to resign as the CEO of Mozilla, which makes the Firefox web browser. I think they make some other stuff. In fact, I use their FileZilla program to upload my podcast every week. Well, I mean, when I'm in town, I use FileZilla, I use Mozilla, I use Firefox all the time. I didn't know that this fellow was a conservative, and I'm still not sure after reading all about this. I've got a report here from Reuters. They're asked the question, was Mozilla CEO Brendan Eich, did he get his good comeuppance, or was he the victim of intolerance? Because apparently back in 2008, Mr. Eich made a donation of $1,000 to the Proposition 8 campaign out in California, trying to preserve normalcy from the perverts, the deviants, the homosexuals, the queers, the lesbians, the dykes, and the garden variety sodomites who are hell-bent on killing themselves and dragging us all down with them. Yes, those supporters of public homosexual marriage and the affirmation of deviant, destructive, unhealthful lifestyles that God has already told us is dangerous and an abomination, and there's a reason. Those people. So he gives $1,000 to Proposition 8, which was only trying to stop public marriage at the county courthouse. That's all they wanted. That's where they were going to draw the line. Every other kind of deviance and perversion, they're fine to tolerate. They just don't want the public affirmation codified in law by marriage. Just an attempt to draw some kind of line, some kind of boundary to restrain the most wicked among us who would destroy our children and literally drive our society toward a suicidal end. That's all they were trying to do. So he gives $1,000. And now he was forced to resign this past week. By the way, Eich invented JavaScript. So he's probably, I'm sure he's okay financially. But he was driven. I mean, at least he's not going to be living in the streets tomorrow afternoon. But he did lose his job. Oh, there at Mozilla. He had only been on the job for a week, I think. And the homosexuals launched a coordinated assault via social media against this fella. And the folks at Mozilla just, I'm sure, got him in a room and just begged him, please just leave before the homosexual mafia burns down our building. So he resigned. And he, not only did he resign, now remember, folks, he didn't stand up and make a speech. He didn't fund a significant campaign against homosexual marriage. All he did was make a donation of $1,000 to a broader political campaign. And now he's been ousted, run out of town on a rail, and he even had to post an apology. He felt he had to post an apology on his blog. What is his apology? He says, "I apologize for the pain that my views have caused." And he did vow to uphold a culture of equality as Mozilla's CEO, including maintaining Mozilla's health benefits for same-sex couples. So I don't know that this guy's even a conservative. I don't think he knows why he made a donation to Proposition 8. Why would he be against any of this? But anyway, not only did he have to resign and give up his living, but he had to apologize. And this, to me, it reminds me, it brings to mind the mark of the beast. You shall not be able to buy or sell unless you take the mark. Well, Mr. Ike can buy or sell, but only because he already had some money in the bank. He's lost his job and been forced to bow and kneel and grovel and apologize at the altar of perversion and homosexual deviancy. He had to grovel and bow, and he had to apologize. And to me, I've always said, you know, people who are wanting to know what is the mark of the beast, I don't think it's a physical mark. I think it's an attitude. I think it's a mindset that's enforced from the top down by the Antichrist. And which Antichrist? Well, just pick one, for crying out loud. Oh, and you know what this brought to mind? Another theory that's a little bit flaky, but I just want you to think about this. People ask the question, what about the instances where God kills kids, and they always bring up the flood? People who hate God and they want to discredit the Bible, they say, oh, in the flood, you know, he killed all those innocent children. And the fact is, we don't know that that's the case. You know, this movie Noah came out, so there's been some talk and a resurgence in interest in the antediluvian world. And I just want to throw out this possibility, because I look at where society is going now, and I would guess if we continue to march in the direction we're going, that within a few hundred years, if not sooner, everybody might be an abortionist or a homosexual. And what if, in the 1500 years prior to Noah's flood, what if the antediluvians were all homosexuals by the time it was the end? What if by the time Noah got his family and the animals on the ark, there weren't any children? Because they had all been killed by abortion and child sacrifice, or the vast majority of the society had become a bunch of homosexuals, and there weren't any kids, and there was no possibility of any of it going any further. Just a thought. There is no turning back. Speaking of no turning back and all that, thank you, Bob. Yeah, appreciate that. Welcome back to the soothing, cool, mellow sounds here at the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you back. I want to go to this article syndicated by Patrick J. Buchanan. As the world is simply turning itself inside out and upside down before our eyes, as good becomes evil and light becomes darkness, right before our eyes. And old alliances and old animosities are twisted and turned pretzel-like on the political stage. Patrick Buchanan writes a commentary in support of Vladimir Putin, former head of the KGB. Now, if you would have told Patrick Buchanan 30 years ago that he would write an article, an opinion piece, supportive of a former head of the KGB, he would have probably had you admitted to a psychiatric facility for evaluation. But Patrick Buchanan wrote the article, "Whose Side Is God On Now?" He says, "Vladimir Putin's defense of Russia's annexation of Crimea recalls last December's address where the former KGB chief spoke of Russia as standing against the decadent West. Vladimir said, quote, many Euro-Atlantic countries have moved away from their roots, including Christian values. Policies are being pursued that place on the same level a multi-child family as the same-sex partnership, place on the same level a faith in God and a belief in Satan. This is the path to degradation. Unquote. That was Vladimir Putin. Thank you, Mr. Putin. So that's what Vlad said last December. Now he's taken the Crimea, and all the Western powers have basically wet themselves and stepped aside and let Mr. Putin continue to march. Well, Pat Buchanan says that with Marxism and Leninism a dead faith, Putin is saying that the new ideological struggle is between a debauched West led by the United States and a traditionalist world that Russia would be proud to lead. In the new war of beliefs, says Buchanan, Putin is saying it is Russia that is on God's side and the West is Gomorrah. Ouch, Pat. Man. Putin is entering a claim now that Moscow is the godly city of today and a command post of the counter-reformation against the new paganism. He says that Putin is also tapping into the worldwide revulsion of and resistance to the sewage of a hedonistic secular and social revolution coming out of, that's right, the West. Now, it's hard to argue with Mr. Buchanan's points here. There's no doubt Putin has staked out that space. And there's no doubt that the sewage and the perversion, the pornography, the homosexuality, the deviancy that is enveloping the West and becoming the main export of the West is a threat to all that is good and holy and righteous and innocent and clean. I can't argue that. What else does Mr. Buchanan says? In the culture war for the future of mankind, Putin is planting Russia's flag firmly on the side of traditional Christianity. And Mr. Putin is certainly doing that. He's a very politically astute operator, Vlad is. Mr. Buchanan goes on to note that, you recall, in 2013, the Kremlin imposed a ban on homosexual propaganda, a ban on advertising abortion services, a ban on abortions after 12 weeks, and a ban on sacrilegious insults to religious believers. And therein, Mr. Buchanan. And now, nowhere in here does Mr. Buchanan say, now, we know Vladimir is staking these out, that this is his position to defend Christianity. And we know that any just leader in the world should defend Christendom, Western civilization, the cradle of all that's left of civilization. Defend the Christian religion. Defend traditional biblical values. We all believe that that's what a good leader would do. But nowhere in the article does Mr. Buchanan point out that we can't trust Vladimir Putin to be our banner carrier. Maybe we can't trust Putin. Can Putin be trusted? Well, here's the thing, Mr. Buchanan, and I think you're probably a smart fellow, I'm sure. But the Kremlin did not ban homosexuality as traditional Christian values would dictate. They only banned homosexual propaganda. Mr. Putin and the Kremlin did not ban the murder of innocent children as traditional Christian values would have us do. They merely banned advertising abortion and killing kids who are over 12 weeks of age in the womb. So Mr. Putin cannot be trusted to be the defender of Christianity around the world. Because even if Vlad is the last bulwark against the decline and fall of Christendom, which I hope he's not, you know, he is either deceived or he is a deceiver in believing that he can regulate ungodly, destructive, immoral behavior instead of just banning it outright, which is what any good Christian leader would do. So I think Mr. Putin is a political opportunist. He sees the schism that's being created as perversion and deviancy. It has already dominated what's left of the Christian church. It's taken over what's left of the Christian church and is currently in the process of taking over governments and becoming official government policy and perhaps even justification for military action to impose the homosexualist deviant agenda upon other nations. That's where we're headed. So Putin sees the schism, and he's going to step in and take advantage of it. But he is not Christendom's hero. He's certainly not to be trusted any more than those here in America who claim to be conservatives but want to regulate what is in fact criminal behavior that should be outlawed and punished. So, yeah, Pat Buchanan, interesting article, all of that. Vlad, you look great with your shirt off. Yeah, I'd love to. I would pay to watch you wrestle a bear. Sure I would. I'd pay to watch him wrestle a bear. But I don't think that you are the one to save Christendom from itself. Not sure how to put it. I don't know what's happened to the church. But, you know, when the church declines, the government follows, because the only thing restraining governing officials, who are mostly liars, thieves, and lawyers, the only thing that restrains them is the fear that they will be viewed as morally corrupt by someone else in society, and we're running out of those people who would view the criminal governing officials as morally corrupt, and we end up now with Vladimir Putin stepping into the vacuum. That's how bad it's got. All right, now on to the real church. We go to Pakistan. This is from the Telegraph in London. A gentleman named Sawan Masih has been convicted. He's a cleaner. I don't know what that means, he's a cleaner. I guess he cleans houses, he cleans things. Basically, he's a blue-collar worker. He's been accused of insulting the Prophet Muhammad during a conversation with a Muslim friend there in Pakistan. Within hours of the allegation, about 3,000 protesters started to burn down Christian houses and churches near Lahore in Pakistan. Well, Mr. Masih's supporters have always claimed that the incident was in fact fabricated as a part of a plot to seize land. But the courts, that's right, they wanted to steal whatever this poor guy had. So they accuse him of insulting the Prophet Muhammad, get a death sentence put on him, so they can steal his land. So the Telegraph reports that Pakistan has not in fact carried out capital punishment for such blasphemy charges, but violent mobs and extremists have. So what's the difference? I mean, the accused ends up just as dead, whether the governing authorities do it or if they just turn a blind eye and allow the Christians to be burned and killed by the Muslims. Yeah, I have a quote here from the president of the Christian pressure group Life for All Pakistan, a Christian group promoting tolerance for Christianity in Pakistan. He says, in Pakistan, even being accused of blasphemy is the equivalent to being sentenced. That's right, the judge may not carry out the execution, but your friends and neighbors and other shopkeepers might just come and burn your house down and kill you and your family. How bad is it in Pakistan? In 2011, the governor of Punjab was shot dead by one of his own bodyguards for taking up the case of a Christian woman sentenced to death. We reported on that. So this is genuine persecution, and it's on the increase around the world, because as Christianity is squelched and pushed underground, what will step in to fill the vacuum? Well, it will be secularism in the case of, thinly veiled secularism, as in the case of Russia and other Eastern states, or it'll be Islam, not so thinly veiled, outright, that will fill the vacuum. In fact, let's go to China for a report on the real church. Thousands of Chinese Christians have mounted an extraordinary round-the-clock defense of a church in a city known as the Jerusalem of the East after Communist Party officials threatened to bulldoze the church. Bible-carrying believers this past week flocked to the Sanjiang Church in Wenzhou, hoping to protect it from the bulldozers. Chinese communist officials claim that the church had been built illegally and used red paint to daub the words demolition and illegal construction onto the facade of the church and are threatening to bulldoze it down. Now, Wenzhou is a booming port city, according to this article from the Telegraph in London. It's a booming port city known for its vibrant Christian community. Said to be the largest Christian community in China, both above ground and, of course, in the home, the house churches, the underground Christian church there in China. Well, hundreds of people, after this declaration was made by the government that they were going to bulldoze this church, hundreds of people, including elderly and in some cases disabled women, have now occupied the church to prevent demolition teams from moving in. Wenzhou's underground house churches, and those are churches unwilling to comply with the Communist Party rules, have long been subjected to sporadic crackdowns. Back in 2000, hundreds of churches and temples were demolished across another Chinese province. So we keep our brothers and sisters in prayer there at the church in Wenzhou, Sanjiang Church in Wenzhou, where being a Christian doesn't just mean being sneered at and snickered at and not invited into certain social gatherings, but it means carrying your Bible in front of a bulldozer and standing up for what's left of Christendom. Don't get me wrong, I know that's a little melancholy, but I'm not depressed, I'm not defeatist in any way. I know that revival is coming. I know it because I'm a part of it. But I can't help the thought, in fact, the conviction, that the revival will not come before those who have built up this edifice of destruction that's looming over all of us until it collapses in upon them and itself and destroys so many people. It's just sad to see. It's just sad to see. But revival is coming. And I know how it all ends, and I know that we're victorious. It's just sad to think about the lives that'll be destroyed before it reaches them. So I hope you're paying attention. Speaking of what's left of Christendom, we go to the bad religion file. President Obama has given a rosary that was blessed by the Pope to Nancy Pelosi. First of all, the fact that the Pope met with Barry in public without publicly rebuking him is an affront to the Christian leadership role that he ostensibly holds. Okay, I'm sorry. Bad move, Pope. I know that you and Barry agree on the whole communism thing. Okay? So you're fellow travelers in that sense. But he's a promoter of Sodom and a baby killer, Mr. Pope. How do you meet with him? How do you give him a rosary that you blessed, for crying out loud? And now he gives it to Nancy Pelosi as if to slap you in the face with it, Mr. Pope. Nancy says, I was happy to receive a rosary blessed by Pope Francis. It means a great deal to me. It's a great deal, yeah. Breitbart, their big government page who reported this, says that Nancy Pelosi is an avid supporter of abortion and same-sex marriage, both of which conflict with the teaching of the church. Conflict, Mr. Breitbart reporter? Well, that's an understatement. The support of homosexuality and the killing of innocent people doesn't just conflict with the teachings of the church. It's in total rebellion. And is an open declaration of war against the Christian church. That's what a baby killing and homosexuality is. It's a declaration of war. It's not just a minor conflict. Breitbart reminds us that back in March, Pelosi accepted the Margaret Sanger Award for her work defending abortion rights. Pelosi has recently rebuked the pro-life community and criticized personhood laws. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Pelosi, for helping me to be more certain that I am right, knowing that you criticize personhood laws. So nothing could be more affirming to my work in that area than knowing that you are against us. Now, a story here quickly as we're running out of time from the Ghosts of Clinton's Past file. Bill Clinton has a friend named Jeffrey Epstein. In fact, Bill Clinton took multiple trips to Jeffrey Epstein's private island up until 2008. Seems like Bill and Jeff were good buddies. Well, in 2008... Jeffrey Epstein was charged with all kinds of crimes against, well, primarily underage prostitutes. Yeah, apparently Epstein had a private island that Clinton would visit quite often. And the two men's friendship seems to have ended abruptly around the time of Epstein's arrest on the charges of basically enslaving women. Clinton was also, this is according to the Daily Mail, Clinton was also apparently friends with a woman who collected pictures of underage girls for Epstein. In fact, this woman, who was friends of Epstein, she was invited to Chelsea's wedding recently. Yeah. Yeah. Jeffrey Epstein served time in 2008 for his illegal, well, I can't even go into what he did on his, on his private island there in the Caribbean, where underage girls were allegedly kept as sex slaves. And Bill Clinton visited regularly until this fellow was arrested. So that's from the Ghosts of Clinton Past. Clinton present, Clinton future, all of that. All right, more from the Decline of Christendom file. File gets thicker every week. It's kind of, it's a bit dispiriting, but it helps us who are shining the light know that as the darkness creeps in, we've got to shine the light brighter. We go again to the Daily Mail in London. Married people are now a minority in England. Yeah, 51% of people in England are not married right now. And just to give you an idea of what has happened, among people born in 1930 in the United Kingdom, about 92% had been married by the age of 40. You see that? More than 90% of people born in 1930 were married by the age of 40. Of those born in 1970, only 69% of people had ever been married by the same age of 40. And the 2011 census shows that only about 22% of people under age 40 are married right now. So I consider England to be the cradle of modern day Christendom, as far as I know it. And this is what's happened in England: the decline of Christendom continues as the population of married people in the former bastion. I mean, it's where the King James Bible was translated, for crying out loud. You got to give England some credit for the advancement of the Christian religion. Well, only about 22% of people under age 40 in Great Britain are married right now. And now, let's go from England, we'll go to the other side of the world to see how things are going over in Japan. A story from the Telegraph: the Japanese government is funding matchmaking events in a desperate attempt to boost a birth rate that has halved over the past 60 years. The birth rate is only half what it was 60 years ago. In Japan, the prime minister has allocated about $15 million for birth rate boosting programs. The support of marriage and the active encouragement of young people to get married and settle down is regarded now by Japanese policymakers as a key strategy for boosting the nation's birth rates. Local authorities in Japan. So for decades, the Japanese governing authorities and the ruling elite, those who educated the children in their university, have all bought into this population scare. Too many people are bad. We've got to choke off the next generation. We need birth control, condoms, abortion, stop having kids. It's going to be a disaster. They've believed all that. I don't think they really believed it either, by the way. I don't think anybody really believes that. I think people have an enormous capacity for selfishness. And if you give them an ideology that makes their selfishness appear to be humanitarian greatness, well, then they'll take advantage of it. And that's what the aging population in Japan and many other Western governments has done for the past 50 or 60 years. Their own selfishness has been aggrandized as humanitarian greatness in choking off the next generation. So they could have more stuff and more money and more of everything. Well, now the chickens are coming home to roost in Japan. They realize that without the next generation, they're going to get old, lonely, sick, and die. Well, you know, they're getting exactly what they deserve, but it's still sad. Well, over in Japan, local authorities are now able to apply for government grants for projects relating to supporting marriage and increasing birth rates. Matchmaking events sponsored by the government are becoming increasingly common. One governor in Kochi in Japan says, "Now is the last chance to take action on this problem. I'm deeply concerned," he says, "I'm deeply concerned as to whether young workers in the future will be able to take on such a huge burden." What's he talking about? He's not talking about the morality of it all. That's not what he's concerned about. He's not concerned about miseducating an entire generation of youth to kill and destroy their own children. That's not what bothers him. He's worried they won't have enough young workers to pay for his depends when he's old, or to put him in a decent home. It's just sad. But that's what they're concerned about, is the tax base is shrinking. And that's what will get people's attention. That's what will get the ungodly's attention. It won't be the morality of it. It'll be the threat to their own comfort. And when it comes to that point in a society where the godless are afraid for their own comfort and security and safety, you can bet that the whole thing is on the verge of some utter catastrophe in order to reset and change things around. Should I do this story? I'm going to do this story out of Texas. This is unbelievable. From the personhood file. We might go just a little bit long, so just bear with me. Brad Newton is a grandfather who lives in Portland, Texas, near Corpus Christi. Well, this grandfather's granddaughter, Natalie, suffered a severe brain injury that required intensive, risky surgery. After that procedure came even more heartache for this grandfather and the whole family, as Natalie suffered organ failure, impending kidney disease. She was also left a quadriplegic. And the grandfather said that the chances of the little girl surviving even 1 year were less than 4%. So what did the grandfather start thinking? Listen to the question Grandpa asks right here. After learning all this about his granddaughter, his beloved granddaughter, finding out that she may not live a year. Finding out basically that she is going to die. She's very sick and she's going to die. So what does Grandpa say? Here's what he says. So of course you have to start thinking, do we want her to live like this? And of course the answer is no. Grandpa decided he didn't want his granddaughter to live because she's sick. And she's going to die soon. So what does he decide? He doesn't want her to live. The family went before an ethics committee at Corpus Christi Hospital. And it was voted by the family and hospital officials unanimously that to end Natalie's life, to kill her, was the humane thing to do. Well, in Texas, the only way to end life, the end of life process can be done in Texas is to remove the life support by removing feeding tube and hydration. The family was told to bring Natalie home and starve her to death. And Grandpa asked at that point, the grandfather said, wait a minute, isn't that starving her to death? Why can't we just inject some morphine or do something peaceful and quick? Why can't we just kill her quickly? Said her grandfather. Well, in Texas, human euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide is illegal. So Natalie's family unplugged her feeding tube and her hydration, and over the course of 9 days, she starved and thirsted to death in front of her own family. And so, what is the family's mindset now? Now the family is involved in a crusade to change the laws in Texas to allow families to kill their innocent children. They want the state law to allow euthanasia for human beings in Texas. So the family who killed their granddaughter and their daughter, they are now killers. And they want it to be easier for other families to kill other sick children. This is the state of, this is Texas. What I often refer to as the last free country on earth. This is the state of the hearts of the fathers toward their children. It's just terrible. It's just terrible. I pray that if my child was ever in a situation like this, I would simply want to do all I could to make my child as comfortable as possible and to do anything that might help my child to recover. I can't imagine ever deciding that it's time to kill my child. I can't even comprehend it. And this grandfather tells this story as if he's a humanitarian crusader for all that is good, as he starved his granddaughter to death. It's awful. It's awful. Now they're killers. A whole family of murderers. It makes it very difficult now to move on. I've got these other stories that are just stupid. But I don't want to leave us depressed. So anyway, take a look in your heart. Take a look in your family. Find out where your heart lies. Because if you agree with this grandfather that this was what had to be done, then you're just one step from hell yourself. You're just one step from hell yourself, and you need the gospel. All right. Let's move on to something a little less disturbing, definitely less disturbing, but disturbing nonetheless. It's reason number 707 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. A California high school science teacher gave students and colleagues a new lesson in biology last month, showing up for the first time as a woman. That's right. The former Gary Sconce, a 56-year-old teacher, male, Gary Sconce, took spring break and came back and will now be known as Karen, she said. NBC News Now goes along with the play acting and calls Gary a she. Gary says, I'm so filled with joy. Under a long auburn wig and makeup, wearing a blue flower dress and a size 12 open-toed shoes, the transgender teacher returned to class. Well, NBC News reports that the change has stirred controversy in the small town of Oakhurst, California. One neighbor wrote a letter published in the local newspaper telling the teacher to quit her job and urging the community to reject the teacher. That's one person. And then this news article from NBC goes on with a half a dozen others who stand up and say how wonderful this transgender teacher is and how wonderful it is that he, she, it is now teaching in their school and has access to their kids and all that. All right. You know, I think that deep down, a lot more people would like to say what this one woman was quoted as saying this teacher should be ashamed, should quit her job, the community should utterly reject her. A lot of people feel that way, but they're all afraid to say it. You see, and that's how the mark of the beast ends up coming into being. You start out, you're just afraid to say it, you don't say it, and before long, everyone who disagrees will pass from the scene, and there will be no one left to teach the next generation what's right and what's wrong. And they'll all take the mark. And then all hell breaks loose. All right. I got one from the Justice File here that's just, it's laughable. In 1999, 25-year-old Christopher Miller forced employees into the back room of a shoe store, tied them up, and robbed the place and fled with the cash. Well, he served a 15-year sentence, and he was released last Friday from jail, from prison. He took a bus from Atlantic City back to Toms River, New Jersey. He went to the very same shoe store, entered the store, and robbed it. He took the cash register, a drawer, and almost $400. He robbed the same store 15 years later. The catch and release program, as practiced in Toms River, New Jersey. He was found a few blocks away and arrested. The police chief there in Toms River says maybe that's the only life he knows, and the only thing he could think of was to go back to the same store and do the same crime again. Gee, you think? Hey, this sheriff, at least this, or this chief of police has half a brain. It is the only life he knew. It's what the justice system taught him. He should have been flogged and had to pay back the store. It might have changed his life. Instead, he robs the same store 15 years. Unbelievable. Almost laughable. But that's the state of justice. Finally, from CBS News, more than half the cigarettes sold in New York State are smuggled in to avoid the state taxes on cigarettes, which have soared nearly 200% in New York since 2006. New York's cigarette tax is $4.35 a pack, and anti-smoking crusaders say that taxes on cigarettes are designed to discourage smoking. Smoking activists have long argued that fewer people will buy cigarettes if they're extremely expensive. But what these do-gooder, goody-two-shoes, nanny statists don't understand is that the free market and business people will always outsmart the tax-hungry nanny state. And even though you want to do good by everybody by raising taxes on things that you deem to be socially unacceptable, there are businessmen out there, both above board and below, and under the table, who will always outsmart you idiots who work in the government. That's right. All you lawyers who are running the proctocracy, businessmen are smarter than you. That's why they make more money than you. That's why they chart their own course. They're not at the government teat. And they'll always outsmart you people. And I guess that's all I've got for this week. All right. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Should the Lord tarry, I will return. And I want to thank my friends at KGOV, American Right to Life, Denver Bible Church. Is there anyone I missed? My other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.